Lori's here. Great. Thank you. Okay, and we will open up a public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 8A. Senators Carter and Monis Anderson.
Good morning, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. First, I want to thank the chair and the committee members for the hearing on this important measure. For the record, my name is Margaret Carter, Senate District 22, North Northeast Portland. We come to you with a memorial that received unanimous support on our Senate and the corporation and helpful collaboration from industry, the proponents, and scientists in its making. The measure has the support of the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Nurses Association, Oregon Chapter of Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Oregon Center for Environmental Health, the Breast Cancer Fund, the Oregon Environmental Council, and the Cosmetic and Fragrance Trade Association headquartered in Washington, D.C. We also worked very closely with the representative of the American Chemical Council, Mr. Jim Markey. I especially want to thank Rachel's Friends Breast Cancer Coalition for bringing the issue to us, and in particular, Diane Lund, for her hard work to educate the public on the need for safe cosmetics. Senate Joint Memorial 8 asked Congress to require labeling of the ingredients of cosmetics and testing of cosmetics, personal care products, and children's toys so the public can make informed choices on products. Scientists have made a correlation linking some chemicals in some cosmetics, personal care products, and children's toys to birth defects and cancer. Certain phthalates have been correlated to cancer, to testicular deformities, genital abnormalities of reduced sperm counts, unscented testes, damages to the liver, kidneys, lungs, and reproductive system. In Europe, 27 nations have banned the sale of personal care products with certain phthalates. This morning, you will hear quality testimony on the concern for health and wellness, for safe cosmetics, and in children's toys in the marketplace, and for the need to have testing, review, approval, and transparency to the ingredients of products that we use on our bodies and toys that we give to our children. This is a careful, scientifically based, and legally researched memorial, and I ask your consideration and approval. And may I also say that the more certified smarts in this scientific venture with us, well, people behind us. I have the passion, the love, and the concern for what is happening and what possibly could happen going through our skin as a result of this particular threat to us as women, but more than all, more than anything, to unborn babies that are being born with certain deformities, and especially boys.
Madam Chair, I'm feeling a bit threatened here right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator, I see that you read from a text. Is that something you'd be willing to give our staff here?
I certainly will.
And then she can make copies for all
Absolutely.
The staff.
Absolutely. But I have to tell you, we've received national news on this, and some of the cosmetics that I wore just a month ago are being changed, and because even though my reproductive years are in the past, but it's still something that... See, Madam Chair, I'm trying to be straightforward.
I know.
I think that it is of great importance to our society, and I think that it's really interesting that 27 countries in Europe are doing things that will help protect unborn children. And I think that it is a war that we're going to be faced with, but I am definitely committed to this war. It's similar to that of cigarette smoking in terms of non-believers, and I think it is something that we can do something about now if we start taking a good look at it. And the reason we didn't have stronger legislation, because the federal government would not allow us to go in and do anything about it. New York got started on this first, and when they saw it being an issue around the country, the Federal Drug Administration stopped states, and I can't think of the word that we use for that one, stopped states from being able to...
Preemption,
that's what I'm trying to say. And so they preempted us in being able to do stronger legislation.
Thank you so much, Senator Cardi. I know you need to get back to committee. Any quick questions, Senator? To your committee? Oh, okay.
I'm delaying my committee. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Monis Anderson, representative from Gresham Trout Delbert Village in Fairview. I am definitely in support of... SJM-8. Phthalates are one of the most common synthetic materials used to make plastic and are known to cause cancer and disrupt the body's hormone system and damage the nervous, immune, and reproductive systems. And they are found, besides cosmetics, they are also found in many children's toys and household items, from bathtub toys to shower curtains, from the teething rings to baby bottle nipples. And it's important for you to know that in virtually all of the European nations, certain uses of phthalates have been eliminated for health issues and for health reasons. And several countries have ambitious programs to reduce the phthalates use overall. It's important also to know that because of the safety of products being manufactured with phthalates, most particular vinyl, and it's also called PVC, that there have been many multinational companies such as Nike, Volvo, Volkswagen, IKEA, and NASA. They have instituted vinyl phasing. And in 1988, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission announced a voluntary withdrawal on the manufacturing of vinyl teething toys containing phthalates and actually requested retailers to withdraw these products from their shelves. And while many of the European countries have and major industries are making significant policy changes, the United States lags far behind in taking action to eliminate phthalates from consumer products. And that's where industry does come in. It is. It comes down to the dollar, and we are here to look out at for the safety of the consumers. Hospitals and healthcare providers have already stepped forward, and they have taken needed action to reduce exposure to phthalates. Kaiser Permanente announced that it would phase out polyvinyl chloride wherever possible, even including their interior decor items such as the carpets and the wallpaper. And Eugene's Sacred Heart Medical Center has completely eliminated vinyl medical products from its neonatal care unit. So the industries are starting to see that this is a program, and I think we just can't wait when we're affecting lives now. And so this is basically a statement to the government that we really need to take action on this issue. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Senator. Any questions? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How does our congressional delegation respond to this resolution?
I spoke with Senator Smith's staff person, but we have not had a chance to get back together, but he's really interested in this, but I have not talked with other members of the delegation. Well, I did speak with Representative Hooley, but not at length in terms of what we were doing, but she did ask me once we get this passed if we would pass the information on to her.
And I need to get to my committee.
Thank you so much. And thank you. Senator, I saw that you were you reading material that you could have send on to
but
our staff?
Mine's all written up. So
okay. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you both, Senators, for
thank
taking
you,
your time
Chair.
To do this. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Is anyone here for Senate Bill 154? Great. We're going to be holding that one over until Friday. So now we will take witnesses on this. We have Martin Donahoe and Diane Lyon. Diane and Renee Hackermile. Okay, please come here. Diane, I know, has been working on this for a very long time. We are so happy to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Announce who you are, and you can start.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I really appreciate being here. I'm Diane Lund, musicant. I've also submitted written testimony from the Oregon Medical Association in support of this measure and the Breast Cancer Fund, which is a national organization. I am an 11-year breast cancer survivor, and I'm board chair and co-founder of a group known as Rachel's Friends Breast Cancer Coalition, which is the sponsor of this measure. Our goal is to reduce the incidence of cancer by reducing our exposure to environmental carcinogens. In that regard, we are dedicated to the memory of Rachel Carson, the author of Silent Spring, who's considered the forerunner of the environmental movement, having fought to ban DDT during the 1950s. Today, the lifetime risk for breast cancer is 1 in 7. That means if every woman in the United States lived age 85, 1 out of 7 would develop breast cancer. Oregon has the second highest incidence of breast cancer in the country, compared to Washington, which is number 1. More mammograms and earlier detection do not explain our very high incidence. A major study was published last week in a journal called Cancer. It revealed that more than 200 common chemicals found in everyday products can cause breast cancer in laboratory animals. Researchers concluded that reducing exposure to these compounds could prevent women from developing the disease. The chemical studies were found in industrial solvents, pesticides, dyes, gasoline, exhaust compounds, hormones, chlorine, drinking water, and cosmetics. The study was conducted by researchers from the Silent Spring Institute, Harvard Medical School and School of Public Health, the Roswell Park Cancer Center in Buffalo, New York, and USC's Keck School of Medicine. Currently, there are major loopholes in federal law that allow the cosmetic industry to put unlimited amounts of chemicals in personal care products with no required testing, no monitoring of health effects, and inadequate labeling requirements. The cosmetic industry uses more than 5,000 chemicals in their products, and everything from lipstick to lotion to shampoo, shaving cream, and deodorant. Many of these same chemicals are also used in manufacturing to grease gears, clean industrial equipment, stabilize pesticides, and soften plastics. What effectively scours the garage floor may not be the best choice for a facial cleanser. For too long, we believe breast cancer prevention has been on the back burner, while Congress has slashed research budgets that would have examined the links between the environment and breast cancer. We must put a stop to this epidemic by focusing on the causes. We believe Senate Joint Memorial 8 is one step in that direction. By enacting legislation that would require labeling of all the chemicals found in cosmetics and personal care products, consumers can make informed choices. I encourage your committee to pass Senate Joint Memorial this morning. We achieved a unanimous victory in the Senate. We hope to achieve a similar victory in the Oregon House and take this measure to our congressional delegation. I'm very pleased that the legislation has been endorsed by numerous environmental and health care organizations and that the American Chemistry Council has chosen not to oppose this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Okay, why don't we hold up on questions then and proceed.
Thank you. Distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, I'm Renee Hackenmiller-Paradis, Environmental Health Program Director for the Oregon Environmental Council. I'd also want to take this opportunity to thank Senator Carter and Senator Moines Anderson for their leadership on this issue. The Oregon Environmental Council supports Senate Joint Memorial 8. SJM 8 acknowledges what the scientific community has long known. Many chemicals are harmful to human health and have no place in children's toys and personal care products. SJM 8 urges Congress to require accurate labeling of all the ingredients in cosmetics, personal care products, and toys. In addition, it calls on Congress to enact legislation to ensure that the chemicals in cosmetics, personal care products, and toys intended for children under the age of 3 are tested, reviewed, and approved as safe for humans. Over the last several decades, there has been an increase in a number of chronic health conditions that permanently affect children's lives, such as reproductive abnormalities, learning disabilities, obesity, and asthma. Many of these problems have been linked with exposure to toxic chemicals, including phthalates. Phthalates are chemical substances that make plastic soft and flexible. They are widely used in a variety of cosmetic products and children's toys, including toys that are designed to be put directly into a baby's mouth. This is problematic given the ability of phthalates to leach out of the products over time. Many of these products are not labeled as containing phthalates, yet we know that human exposure to phthalates is widespread. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found that over 95% of Americans tested had detectable levels of phthalate breakdown products in their urine. Phthalates have been well studied for the reproductive harm in animals and have been linked to similar problems in humans. In the past 4 years, studies from the CDC and Harvard have shown that phthalates are associated with a number of reproductive abnormalities in humans, including early puberty onset, preterm delivery, feminization of male genitals, low sperm count, and damaged sperm DNA. These adverse health outcomes are seen with phthalate levels that are found in almost 25% of women in the U.S. For many chemicals, including phthalates, there are alternatives. Although some major manufacturers have already taken the responsible path toward eliminating these hazards from their products, there is currently no reliable way for consumers to know whether the products they buy contain these chemicals. Given the growing scientific evidence demonstrating the health hazards these unnecessarily dangerous chemicals pose to children, action must be taken to protect one of our most vulnerable populations. SGM-8 is a step in the right direction to ensure that our children are no longer threatened by these dangerous chemicals. OEC strongly supports this legislation, urges its passage, and thanks the distinguished members of the committee for your consideration.
Any questions? Of course, the first time I'd ever heard of this was last week, and I found myself rather interested in it. So I did a little bit of homework, and I realized that it was the BPP, part of phthalates, was introduced and developed in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a little confused for myself why we would even move forward with, you know, introducing this into so many products that we have today. I mean, given that it seems like it's not, you know, biodegradable, you know, where you can really break it down or anything.
Well, the way our current system is set up, there is no requirements to test chemicals before they are put into products. And so we find out many years later, PCBs are a great example of something that was put into the environment and has caused immense harm to the health. And now we've phased them out 30 years ago, but we're still suffering some of the repercussions for something like that. And so this legislation is asking to set up a system to make sure that this doesn't happen, that these products don't become ubiquitous in our population, and then we find out 10 years later that they're injuring human health. And so that's what this is calling for.
President Kotek, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the status now of labeling for personal products? Because I find it interesting that while the phthalates help, apparently, find fragrance in progress.
Mm-hmm.
They can label it as fragrance. Are there any rules now about labeling personal products?
Fragrances and flavorings are exempt from labeling by the FDA. The industry considers them trade secrets, as far as we know. And there have been efforts in this country to ban, you know, products that contain these chemicals, but that those efforts have been unsuccessful. And we believe that we need to know what's in those products, just like we can choose what's in our food that we buy. We need to also choose, you know, what we're putting on our skin. And interestingly, you know, as I believe Senator Carter mentioned, European Union banned these chemicals from being in products. And so the same industry, Revlon and Avon and the State Auditor, they took those chemicals out. Products. They reformulated them, but they haven't done it in this country. They've been unwilling to. But there are, in fact, companies that are chemical-free. You know, they have chosen. They're in the minority, the smaller companies. Mm-hmm. The larger companies have not done so.
Thank you. That's interesting. Follow up?
Go ahead.
So they get away with it by essentially adding it to the fragrance first,
exactly.
And then saying, isn't the fragrance?
Sure.
We, you know,
sure. So the label will say fragrance, but you don't know what's in there.
Thank you.
Representative Cohen?
Thank you. I'm just curious now, I guess, put yourself in the manufacturer's position for just a moment. I'm sorry, I know that's painful. But what's the advantage to the industry of using this particular product? What good things from the industry perspective does it do for the products?
Oh, well, so like the phthalates that allow the fragrance to be bound to the products, that's how the products were originally formulated. And so it's, you know, it's a tool that they found out when they developed their product, how they make their product. So it's just part of their manufacturing process.
This was just a curiosity question.
Right.
You know, when you say it makes it bound, is it
So, like, if you
works
put,
better or lotion. Stays with you longer.
Well, that was just, you know, like anything that was happened to be what chemical was at the time available to allow them to incorporate that feature into their products. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what its redeeming value is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, what are you trying to? You're suggesting then that it's kind of a piece of glue or cohesive
right.
element to,
right.
to that.
Right. That's a good. Yeah.
You know, okay. what we want is we want labeling. Obviously, uh-huh. Oregon can't require that, but we want consumers to have the ability to make a choice when they're buying a product so that they know what's in that product, so they can read and see if there are such things as phthalates in there, and they can choose to buy or not to buy, just like they choose organic versus non-organic food. Right now, we don't have that choice because we don't, you know, those, you know, that information isn't available.
Well, and also I think it's important to realize that there are alternatives that have been developed as our technology has advanced. We are much more technologically advanced than we were when phthalates were introduced, you know, in the 50s. Now we have alternatives. So incorporating the non-toxic alternatives into the products is a choice. It's not like we have to eliminate all fragrances from personal care products. It's what you use to make those products work the way we want to.
Yeah, I find that interesting, Renee. Probably 50 years from now, we'll have another body look at that and look at this right now with the alternatives and say, what were those dumbbells doing back then? I mean, no, just...
Why hope not? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, let's change to the plastic products. Can you talk about countries, what they've done around the plastics? Because to me, that's probably maybe more of an issue because apparently this helps with flexibility and... But the leaching of the phthalates from the plastics is a problem. So have countries banned it in production in the plastics? It seems like some toys in some countries have been banned. But how far are we on that regard?
Again, there are alternatives. It's the clear plastic that it's needed for. And so, like, you can get products that don't necessarily have – you can get plastic products that don't have phthalates in them, but they're – currently with technology, there's different, you know, they look a little bit different. But as Senator Moines Anderson pointed out, lots of hospital systems, because these phthalates are in the flexible tubing that are used in hospitals, but they have developed alternatives for that particular use. So, again, it's just incorporating it into the products and reformulating how they're developed now. And so... That answer the question?
I think so. It sounds like there hasn't been as much movement on that end of it versus the care products.
Right.
It sounds like there needs to be.
The EU has banned phthalates in any children's toys.
Okay.
So, like teethers and rubber duckies and things like that. So,
all right. Thank you.
I think it's an issue that needs more exploration, and, you know, our organization, Rachel's Friends, will continue to work on this issue. Mm-hmm. So, bringing more legislation to your next session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a final question for me. What is the length of time period that phthalates stay in your body? I mean, like, if, let's say, for example, I've had a consistent level of receiving those over the past 2 years, and all of a sudden tomorrow they're completely eliminated out of my life because I don't want to use anything like that again. What's the time period?
They don't bioaccumulate like things like mercury, but because of the constant exposure and because they are, not to get too technical, but they're endocrine disruptors, they work like hormones. So once they're in your body, that exposure, their action is immediate. So so they are a limit. So if you decided today that you no longer want to drink out of plastic water bottles, in a couple of days, the breakdown products would be out of your system. The body does break down and is able to eliminate them.
And I don't think we want to say that.
You announce yourself.
I'm sorry.
You need to announce
I'm sorry.
Yourself.
Diane Lund, Music Hat. We're not to say that if you use certain shampoos or lotions or deodorants or cosmetics, you're going to get cancer. But there's so much in our bodies that we don't know how it's affecting our immune system. Right now, only about 10% of cancer is known to be caused by, you know, our genes, what we're born with.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is, you know, up for grabs. We know hormone replacement therapy, for example, probably is responsible for 30 to 40%, but there's a whole range of, you know, environmental carcinogens that we believe are responsible, and that we believe that they accumulate in our bodies and then trigger this awful disease. But we don't want to say, like I said, that if you just use certain products, you're going to get cancer. We never would say that. We just want to do our best to have an informed public and to eliminate as many carcinogens as possible.
Okay.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you both.
Thank
very
you.
Much
Thank
for
you.
Work you've done
Thank
on
you.
This. So is Martin here? Martin Donahoe?
and Cheyenne Trotman.
Is it my trouble?
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this bill? Okay, John, there are only two chairs. I'll wait for you in just a minute. Thanks, John.
There's
three. There's three chairs. I know, we've got two.
Good morning. My name is Martin Donahue. We're set to go. Do you want to go first?
No. With the check of your life, that's fine.
So my name is Martin Donahue. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'm a physician. I practice internal medicine, and I teach in the Women's Studies and Community Health Departments at Portland State. I'm also on the Board of Advisors of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and am the Chief Science Advisor for their Campaign for Safe Foods. I have over 100 publications and speak nationally and internationally on environmental health issues. Before talking about this specific measure, I thought it might be helpful to introduce what is perhaps the fundamental principle of public health, and that's the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle states that when evidence points to the potential of an activity to cause significant, widespread, or irreparable harm to public health or the environment, options for avoiding that harm should be examined and pursued, even though the harm is not yet fully understood or proven. There are four essential practical principles that underlie the precautionary principle. They are, number one, give human and environmental health the benefit of the doubt. Number two, include appropriate public participation in the discussion. Number three, gather scientific, technological, and socioeconomic information. And number four, consider less risky alternatives. Now to the current resolution. Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility supports this measure, which will urge the Congress of the United States to enact legislation that requires testing, review, and approval of ingredients used in cosmetic products, in particular the phthalates that we have been discussing. Such legislation would allow consumers to make better informed choices to protect their health and the health of their families, and would enhance our knowledge about these chemicals. Everyday Oregonians are exposed to phthalates through water, food, and other residues that are inhaled or ingested, but also through cosmetics and personal care products such as hairspray, deodorants, nail polish, and perfumes. Oregon PSR believes that the evidence we have is strong enough that we should act now to prevent exposure to these toxic chemicals. While acute poisonings are rare, low-dose exposure is associated with a variety of detrimental health effects, which I'll review in just a moment. Several studies suggest that the constant exposure to these chemicals may be related to widespread trends of lower sperm count, obesity and diabetes, and breast cancer. Phthalates are endocrine disruptors. Exposure during fetal and child development can disrupt hormone function critical to normal development. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, cannot require companies to do safety testing of their cosmetic products before manufacturing. In fact, a cosmetic manufacturer may use almost any raw material as a cosmetic ingredient and market the product without approval from the FDA. The Cosmetics Ingredients Review Board, the industry's self-policing safety panel, falls far short of compensating for this lack of FDA oversight. The Environmental Working Group has analyzed products over its 30-year history and found that the CIR reviewed the safety of just 13% of the 10,500 different ingredients used in personal care products. The FDA does no systematic review of safety. That means that nearly 90% of ingredients used in personal care products have not been evaluated for safety by any publicly accountable institution. Since people apply an average of 126 unique ingredients on their skin daily, these chemicals are raising concerns for their potential impacts to human health and to the environment. Now, the health effects of phthalates. 1 billion pounds, that's 1 billion pounds, of phthalates are produced each year and used in perfumes, children's toys, hairspray, lubricants, wood finishers, car interiors, medical equipment, paints, adhesives, and cosmetics. You can see that they're ubiquitous. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention conducted a study released in the year 2000 that found that high levels of certain phthalate compounds were present in most Americans. Of most concern was the disproportionate number of women of childbearing age with high levels of a particular metabolite, DBP. The CDC study also found that African Americans have higher levels of several phthalates. Phthalates have been measured in urine, serum, breast milk, and amniotic fluid. Humans are exposed through ingestion, inhalation, dermal or skin absorption, and percutaneous exposure. While use of phthalates is declining slightly, phthalates compose 90% of the chemicals found in household dust. While the mechanisms of toxicity for the range of phthalates varies, several forms, including DEHP and a number of other acronyms, are all anti-androgens, which means that they interfere with steroid or testosterone synthesis. At high levels, exposure to phthalates can cause cancer and infertility. Low-level exposure is of great concern, again, because of the common use of these products in consumer and medical devices. Low-level exposure to phthalates and their metabolites is associated with developmental effects, including premature birth, sperm and DNA damage, and something called the phthalate cyst syndrome, which is low testosterone in fetal males, hypospadias, which is where the opening of the urethra comes on the underside of the penis, inhibition of normal scrotal development, undescended testes, which leaves young boys at higher risk of testicular cancer, and then finally, of course, the testicular tumors. One human infant study found phthalate levels significantly correlated with scrotal size, penile volume, and degree of testicular descent. Phthalate exposure is also correlated to allergies and asthma in children and low sperm count in adults. Most human exposure is due to a combination of phthalates in products and in dust. Recent animal studies have found that exposure to a combination of several types of phthalates increases detrimental health effects. The European Union has banned phthalates in cosmetics and children's toys. Reports from the European Chemicals Commission in 2003 and 2004 minimize but do not entirely discount the health effects of phthalates. The Phthalate Esters Panel of the American Chemistry Council has vigorously promoted these reports, which are at variance with other European Union and with scientific peer-reviewed studies on the risks of phthalates. By its own admission, the phthalates esters panel is composed of all the major manufacturers and some users of the primary phthalate esters in commerce in the United States. Panel members included the BASF Corporation, Eastman Chemical Company, ExxonMobil Chemical Company, and the Ferro Corporation. Technor Apex Company, a major user of the materials, is an associate member. The European Chemicals Commission reports have not, I repeat, not led the European Union to overturn its ban on phthalates. San Francisco has banned the sale of phthalate and bisphenol-containing toys to children under age 3. Some state legislatures are considering similar bills. The FDA has recommended that healthcare providers use alternatives to IV tubing containing phthalates for certain groups, such as neonates and pregnant and lactating patients, as well as hemodialysis patients. To summarize, the known and suspected health hazards of phthalates and related compounds are very serious. This measure will enhance consumer awareness, protect individuals from unwanted toxic exposures, and lead to increased understanding of the hazardous effects of phthalates. I placed some references in there, and I'd like to just respond to a couple of the questions that came up earlier quickly, if I may. Since the dawn of the 20th century, there have been more than 80,000 new chemicals introduced into the environment. The vast majority of these have never been tested for their safety or effects on human health and the environment. And really the onus is on the scientific community to look back and find in epidemiological studies any adverse health or environmental consequences of those chemicals. And the more that are introduced, the more difficult that gets. Also, for those interested in looking to find if the cosmetics that they are using are considered safe or not containing phthalates, there is a website that the Environmental Working Group has put up called safecosmetics.org, and you can actually put in the name of the product that you're using to see what ingredients are in there, at least what known ingredients are in there that are not made public by the companies producing those products. Thank you for this opportunity to speak before you.
Thank you very much, John. Any questions of this witness? Thank you. Next, I hope you come to
I think we had a question.
I just wanted to say before you come again in the future, for some of our old eyes, if you could print a little bit larger.
I have the smallest font I've ever seen. Yeah, I have a confession. I wrote this out this morning, and to my chagrin, being a teacher of environmental health, normally I would copy this and put it on two-sided paper, but since I didn't want to go to three or four sheets, it's smaller. So I apologize to those of you who think it's magnifying glass to decipher this.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here, Doctor. I got some mascara in my eye. I wanted to ask you, who are the publicly accountable entities that do testing, and what are they, what ingredients or products are they testing?
Well, the Environmental Working Group is probably the number one group that's looked at these, and that's what I mentioned. Their site, safecosmetics.org, actually gives their testing criteria, what specifically they're looking for, and what they are able to look and not look for. They and a few others have conducted studies looking at between 200 and up to 1,000 Americans, where they draw blood samples looking at up to 300 different toxic chemicals, and basically were marinated in these things, and many of them do stay around forever, unfortunately.
A follow-up, if I might.
Follow-up.
And that's a public entity? Because I'm interested also in the FDA.
Yeah, the FDA does not do this. It's not within the FDA's purview. Again, now if a scientific organization or a research group were to approach the FDA and bring information about the adverse health effects of one of these products, the FDA could go back and act. It's much like with the pharmaceutical industry. For instance, a drug might get approved on the basis of a study that's conducted, a phase 3 study, which is a double-blind randomized controlled trial in, say, 1,000 patients. And let's say that drug has a 1% incidence of aplastic anemia, meaning it wipes out your bone marrow. So that drug gets approved, and then it's given to, say, 100,000 or 1 million Americans. You're going to get thousands of cases of aplastic anemia. And the onus is on scientists to look back through case control studies, determine, yes, this drug has caused problems, present the data to the FDA, and the FDA then goes to the company and tries to get the drug taken off the market. We saw something like this with Vioxx and heart disease. We're seeing something in the news just like this based on a study out just this week with Avandia, a diabetes drug that increases the risk of heart disease. And what's been found both in the Vioxx and Avandia case is that in fact, the companies making those products actually had information regarding their harm well before those who were conducting research with public funding discovered those adverse consequences. And many people have, in fact, died as a result of this. So there's very inadequate regulation. And this measure is just a small step in the right direction to give consumers the opportunity to make an informed choice about what they're applying to themselves and what essentially rubs off on their infants too, if you've got someone who's holding a baby close to their face.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions? Thank you so much, Doctor, for giving us a lot of information in a short amount of time. Obviously, it's an issue that's very important to you, and I'm so glad you're working on this and bringing us this information.
Well, thank you for the opportunity again.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cheyenne Chapman, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Center for Environmental Health. We're a 501c3 organization. We've been around for over 10 years now. And our mission is to protect public health and the environment by promoting alternatives to the use, manufacture, release, and disposal of toxic chemicals. We also are the coordinator for Oregon for the Healthcare Without Harm campaign that has already been referred to many times throughout these proceedings so far. And would certainly add in that regard that the examples given of the precautionary principle, particularly in the healthcare field, I believe it's very persuasive that first do no harm is a guiding principle in healthcare, and whether it's mandated as in the European Union or voluntary, so far as it is here, we are moving forward with making our environment a little bit more safe. I am here to urge your support of Senate Joint Memorial 8, and I wanted to add a couple of things to the discussion. I've brought along one of our newsletters with a real report on Not Too Pretty. There's something called a Think Before You Pink campaign, and along with Senator Carter, I too have revised the contents of my makeup kit since I've begun research on this issue. This report, the In May of 2002, Healthcare Without Harm, along with the Environmental Working Group and Coming Clean, published the report Not Too Pretty, Phthalates, Beauty Products, and the FDA. This coalition of public and environmental health groups tested a variety of name-brand, off-the-shelf beauty products, fragrances, hair gel, mousse, hairspray, and lotion, and found phthalates in about three-quarters of the product. As has been mentioned earlier, why would they put this chemical in products? Apparently, phthalates help bind fragrances to products and usually are listed as fragrances rather than phthalates on the label. And they're also used in polyvinyl chloride PVC plastic to improve flexibility, which is why you find them in children's toys as well as in medical supplies where you need that flexibility in the process. One of the key points, I think, is that many consumers believe that the government ensures the safety of cosmetics or personal care products or toys before they're sold. Particularly in the case of cosmetics and personal care products, this simply isn't the case. The Food and Drug Administration, in response to a petition by the Environmental Working Group in September of 2005, confirmed that the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act contains no provision that requires demonstration to FDA of the safety of ingredients of cosmetic products prior to marketing those products. The entire response also goes on, and I might add to my written testimony, that the FDA does not have recall authority over these products, even if a serious problem is found. There is an urgent need for Congress to change these outmoded federal laws to simply require testing, review, and approval of these products, as well as clear labeling of all ingredients. I appreciated Representative Olson's questions. We simply didn't know decades ago. Thousands of chemicals were manufactured and were used in products without ever asking the question, what effects might these have on our bodies or in the environment? And we believe that the Senate Joint Memorial is an excellent step, simply urging us to upgrade and bring our regulatory system more along the lines of what we know to be the case today. And thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you all for bringing this very serious issue to the committee today. John is Senator Collier's faithful legislative assistant, chief of staff.
Morning. Just informational.
Tell us who you are, John.
Yes, ma'am. John Christensen, and I'm staff in Senator Carter's office. I represent CODEC. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to let the committee know that the National Trade Organization for Cosmetics and Fragrances came, sent a representative to the Senate and testified in support of this memorial. So the National Trade Association has conferred and actually supported this memorial. Also, we work fairly closely with Jim Markey, who is the representative for the American Chemistry Council, and they are not in opposition to this memorial.
Thank you, John. Any
Thank
questions
you very much.
This gentleman.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on SJM 8A and open up a work session on SJM 8A.
Madam Chair, I would move SJM 8A to the floor with a do adopt.
Representative Gelser moves SJM 8A to the floor with the do adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Gillian? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Gillian?
Aye.
Representative
Gelser?
Aye.
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 Representative
Olson?
Yes.
Representative Olson? Aye. SJM 8A, having received the constitutional majority, passes. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for all the work that you have done. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm asking Representative Mallard be willing to carry this bill on the floor, Representative? Great.
I will.
All right, I will close the work session on SJM 8A. Thank you very much, committee members. What? Did you have a question?
Well, I just don't know why he chose him.
That being speaker is putting on your head.
That's right.
That's right.
Ma'am,
bring on the controversy.
Can we go off record right now?
Not yet. Okay, Representative Gilliam, we have an informational meeting. I think that you are going to be conducting this. I will open up an informational meeting. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for agreeing to this little short update on an issue that we heard earlier. We were considering legislation and then decided not to. But I think in a positive move, we explored what we could do to address some concerns, particularly at Mary's Woods Center in West Lynn, about governance and transparency. And we discovered in our discussion that there was an existing advisory council that had sort of gone dormant. And so rather than reinvent the wheel or pass legislation or attempt to pass legislation that was unnecessary, we at least revived that. So today I just wanted to get a quick update, and we have with us Elaine Young from DHS, who's going to give us an update on the first meeting that they've had that included a member of the Mary's Woods as one of the new advisory council members. I'm very pleased about this, and I just thought it would be good for us informationally to hear about that.
Great.
So with that, I would suggest that we bring up
Thank you so much, Representative.
I'm sorry, we didn't see.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Elaine Young. I'm a program manager for the Office of Licensing and Quality of Care with Seniors and People with Disabilities Division at the Department of Human Services. And here to update you on the Continuing Care Retirement Communities Advisory Council, which is set forth in Statute Chapter 101. The department has reappointed the committee, and as Representative Gilliam noted, there is a member of the committee from Mary's Woods that has been appointed, although unfortunately she was unable to attend the first meeting. We did have a productive meeting on May 17th and outlined a number of issues that the Advisory Council plans to take up for consideration. Those issues are, the department identified a number of key terms both in statute and rule that are not clear. And so the Advisory Council has asked us to undertake a legal review of the statute and the associated rules and bring forth that review to their next meeting for possible revisions to the law. Also the issue of adequate security for the consumers. In a continuing care retirement community, there's oftentimes a substantial buy-in fee. And the statute is really there for consumer protection with respect to that fee. And there have been some questions about whether the statute is strong enough for that consumer protection. And to that end, the council is going to evaluate possibly adding an actuarial review to the statute and or looking at national accreditation for CCRCs within the statute. A member of the council also asked the council to consider looking at a list of resident rights that should be added to the statute. Evidently, when the statute was enacted in 1990, there was a list of resident rights, but they were not added to the statute at that time, and he's asked for reconsideration of those. The council has also asked the department to do a side-by-side review of House Bill 2491, identifying issues that aren't currently addressed in statute, and then they will consider those issues and make recommendations to the department with respect to those. There was also a member of the public at the council that has asked the council to look at some changing market forces that affect continuing care retirement communities. Such as the nursing facility provider tax, in which they are exempt, the certificate of need, which they are also exempt from, the current moratorium for assisted living and residential care facilities. There are evidently some new ownership-type models, and I don't even understand, there's something about owner equity models that aren't currently addressed in the statute. And then we have also been recently requested to look at currently not a CCRC, but has a campus-like, kind of looks like a CCRC, but never has been because they haven't asked for buy-in fees, to become a CCRC. And the statute and the rules have never really addressed an existing entity to then make itself into a CCRC. So looking at that issue, too, and how well the statute and the rules address those. The Advisory Council has scheduled their next meeting for September 18th, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Young. Mm-hmm. Any questions of this witness?
I just want to say thank you for the follow-up. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Gilley.
Representative Cowan.
I too, would like to add my thanks. I think that some of the questions that you've outlined here that are going to be addressed by the council are very important, and I'm particularly interested in that included in the list of things you're going to talk about are the changing marketplace and perhaps reviewing the current moratorium on assisted living facilities, because I think that is an issue that's going to come back to us next session, and I appreciate some input on that. So thank you for your work, both of you, on this. I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I would also want to, again, thank you for coming over and for this update, because even with the absence of our Mary's Woods representative, the issues that were originally brought by that group, I think, are included here, or at least most of them, as well as issues that Representative Callum has brought up to me. So I see this as a positive step. I'm not always very excited about councils and task force, but I think this one could actually help frame some of these issues, and if needed, we could take action in a future session. So thank you very much, and thank you for having this informational hearing.
Thank you for setting this up, Representative Gilliam. Very good, and thank you for all your work on this.
Thank you
very much, and thank you for coming today. Is there anyone else here wishes to speak on this issue? I will close the informational hearing. And would the committee stand at ease for a second, please? So
clarify what I've heard. You would anticipate us next week meeting
Wednesday
and Thursday, and we will not be meeting on Friday or thereafter.
No. Thursday would be our last, because that's the last day of May.
I'm sorry, without the calendar in my brain,
I know.
I can't.
Me too. Representative Gilliam and Representative
No, I just didn't know if we were at attention, if we're not at ease.
No. You're at attention, sir.
Stand fast.
And the last thing was, I forgot to say this on record about this advisory council. In a rare fit of helpfulness, Andy prepared this wonderful statutory summary, and I just wanted to say that any unpleasantness between Andy and I is largely forgiven as a result of this preparation.
Okay, thank you so much, Representative Gilliam.
Well, Madam Chair, at the risk of creating something that I might regret, should we have a committee gathering?
Oh, yes.
No, I did not read that. I had thoroughly enjoyed working with everyone, so I figure it's some kind of celebration and is in order.
I know, and let's give this some thought. We probably don't need to talk about it in committee, but after we adjourn, maybe we can't talk, though. Okay, so
could we check our calendars and maybe contact the party guy?
Yeah, like first week of June is what I'm thinking.
Vice Chair Olson is volunteering to organize us, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Are we suggesting perhaps an evening event with...
Roger that, Representative Callan.
Refreshments?
In style in downtown Albany. No.
Oh, no. Let's go to a good old hog trough here in Salem.
All right.
Well, Silverton might be an option.
Yes, I was just going to say, if you want to come over, I got it
at
all.
At your
set.
Home?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Representative
okay?
Gelser had already kind of thrown that in initially.
Olson doesn't like my house. So
I was just...
No.
Which one's closest?
How about a compromise? We could go to Chuck E. Cheese.
You got...
Sweet.
Platelets there or whatever?
Platelets. Whatever would be great.
Okay, so we're gonna come up with a date with the possible. How far? How much of a drive is it to?
It's 14 short miles to Paradise.
People have any problem driving to Silverton? It's such a pretty place. So we're there. So we're gonna come. Representative Olson will come up with the date. Maybe we'll have like a potluck since.
Potluck after work is kind of hard.
Well, that's all right. We'll work on that. We'll work something.
I'll host the whole thing.
Oh, no. No. That's not
allowed. I won't?
No.
I think it's against the rules.
That's a great idea.
How you can? I can.
private.
Exactly. Why don't somebody understand?
If you sent the kitty around her offices, we could handle it.
Yeah, we could do it. We'll do something.
We can give each other gifts.
That's true. We can.
That's true.
Secret Santas.
Exactly.
And we are including staff.
You guys like corn dogs?
Andy and Susan.
Even though Representative
security
doesn't necessarily like Andy.
Well, we'll invite Susan and then let's just see.
And I can bring whoever I want. So I can bring
there you go.
Oh, you've learned this process.
Madam Chair, I really kind of fault you for this committee being in the position it's in right now.
I have not had the military discipline that I needed.
The problem of having too many freshmen.
Yes, that's true.
Madam Chair, we only have two or three sessions left, but please never leave like that. Not tell me to leave Andy in person. Very insecure.
Anything else before we close? Go home. Thank you all, committee. We will meet again on Friday, obviously. I say.